This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Jeff Fife. It's Monday. It's an ACC basketball Monday. And boy, what an ACC basketball Monday this one is, Jeff.
You're not kidding. Boy, we got cold temperatures across the region, but it didn't seem to cool down Virginia this weekend. We started this podcast, even though for us, when people listen to it, is what it is. But we're starting a little late today because you got some frozen pipe action, as probably a lot of the folks across the Commonwealth of Virginia, all the way up through New York and Massachusetts. Did you finally get some heat up in here and some water flowing through the house?
Well, the water was fine. It was just the heat. We woke up this morning in the home office. It was 55 degrees. And that's a little cold inside. Right now, we're at a high temperature for the day of 64, temperature rising. So hopefully we'll be back to normal here in short order. But, if it had to go out any time, I mean, as cold as the weather's been the last 2 weeks, even yesterday you wake up, it was below zero outside. At least on the warmer day of the last 2 weeks, this happens, and so we're pretty fortunate in that respect, I guess.
Well, luckily Virginia doesn't have to travel too much during this cold blast, and the only cold that's coming around JPJ is the offensive shooting of the opponents. Unbelievable clinic Virginia puts on against UNC in the second straight year. They've come into Charlottesville and come away with less than 50. Who else does that to the Tar Heels?
Well, and I was impressed, too, because I even turned to Scott German, one of our partners in crime here, sits beside me courtside in the media section at JPJ. And with about 11-something to go, the TV timeout under 12, Carolina had 42 points. And I said, well, you know what? Because last year Virginia held North Carolina to 43 points in a win. And I said, well, North Carolina's at least going to do better than they did last year. They didn't do much better. They scored 7 points in that last 11 plus 1 point in the last 7-11 after cutting the lead to 6. And so shooting 29% from the floor for the game. This is a different Carolina team, though, this year. Obviously, you're missing Justin Jackson. You're missing those two guys on the inside. You still got Barry. You got Luke May back. Now, May was a walk-on. He's a leading scorer this year, 18.1 a game. I mentioned in my keys to the game that one thing Virginia needed to do was really focus on Luke May, because May is a stretch four, and stretch fours, that's the one position and the one player skill can really give a Virginia's pack line defense trouble, is that stretch four position. Jaron Blossom game is a great example of that, the former Clemson player now in the NBA. But May's a different stretch four than a Blossom game type. Blossom game's more of a three who plays a stretch four, at least at the college level. Now he's back to a three in the NBA. May is a slower, more of a post player who happens to be able to shoot threes. And early in that game, you saw, I think it was Isaiah Wilkins blocked one of his jump shots. After a pick and pop, May just casually throws up a 17-footer and got it swatted to the ground. And that seemed to stick in his head the rest of the game. You might have noticed with about 3:33 to go, Carolina's down at that point 13 points. May got fouled coming out of a media timeout, airballed the free throw. That's how frustrated it was, and that's how frustrating the whole team was. He ends up 2-for-10 from the floor, 18-point average on the season, scores 6 on the day, and that really was emblematic of what Virginia did to North Carolina really all game long.
Different players for Carolina this year, obviously, but same coach. And the post-game comments, Roy Williams, who's seen it all from Carolina to Kansas, boy, some pointed. If people aren't paying attention to how good Virginia is, take it from the words of Coach, of Coach Williams. What were some of his comments at the end of the game that sort of stuck out to you that should make the remainder of the ACC, if they weren't paying attention already, to go, we're going to have our hands full this year?
We came in and he sat down, and the first words out of his mouth were, we can make this really short. We just got our butts kicked. And, it was interesting, too, to hear him say, he was asked, with about a minute to go, down 12, and he was down 12 most of those last 5 minutes, because neither team scored from about the 440 mark on. Virginia missed some shots too, but it was different. Virginia missed shots. They couldn't get shots off. He talked about how he was asked about how he took his starters out and basically waved the white flag. I mean, I know a media row, we're all looking around at each other like, hey, he's given up. It's a minute to go, and he's given up with a 12-point deficit. Virginia's come back from a 12-point deficit in the last couple of years. That game at Wake Forest 2 years ago, right around a minute to go, and came back from 12 and won the game in regulation. So he was asked about that, and he looked at the reporter who asked the question and said, shook his head no, and said, were you watching the game? Basically, he was acknowledging his team could not score. And, you know, it felt to me like the end of the Virginia-Virginia Tech football game when you realize no matter how many quarters they would play, Virginia was not going to score on Virginia Tech defensively that day. It felt like that with North Carolina and Virginia. They just figured something out. You know, Joel Berry, the point guard, who is second on the team in scoring for North Carolina, 17.9 per game coming in, but only shooting 39% from the floor. He had a little stretch there. I think he hit three straight threes early in the second half to get his point total up to 17. Didn't score after that. I think it was around 11-minute mark he finally put his last basket in. And he said after the game, too, that it's frustrating. I mean, he acknowledged that. Scott German asked him the question one-on-one. You know, yes, it's frustrating because not only – it's not just the shots that are tough. Carolina had 19 turnovers on 60 possessions. Put that in perspective. That's more than 33% of their possessions. Not quite 33%, 31.7% of their possessions ended in turnovers. Now, Virginia also scored on 11 of those possessions. So Virginia scored on 11 North Carolina possessions. Those are otherworldly statistics in a game with only 60 possessions. North Carolina plays games to 72 possessions per game. So you have a low possession game and a lot of turnovers, a lot of missed shots. You shoot 29% from the floor. You use the word clinic. You use the word clinic to describe that performance by Virginia. That was a clinic on how to stop a North Carolina team that came in averaging 84 a game, scored 49 points.
I don't recall seeing that many dunks from a Virginia squad. And, you know, it used to be, you know, you always love watching Justin Anderson rattle the rim. But we had our first posterizations of Joel Berry this go-round and DeAndre Hunter being one of those on the baseline. And that wasn't one of those cheap pick-six steal turnovers. Mm-hmm. It was an offensive board, baseline, turn around and throw it down Jerome, as so to speak. I was really impressed the way the offense moved, not just the defense, with total confidence, moved the ball around. You know, everyone was – you couldn't really call out one player in particular that was more dominant than another. Just a very – impressive all-around offensive balanced effort.
Yeah, Devin Hall finished with 16 points, didn't shoot the ball in the last 14 minutes. He was 4 of 4 from three-point range, 6 of 8 from the floor. You mentioned DeAndre Hunter, another double-digit game from Hunter playing off the bench in the post. He's a 6'7 guard, and he's played the last two games, the Virginia Tech win and now this North Carolina win. He's also playing as a post option for Virginia. And what that says is, well, one, Jay Huff is still not deemed by Coach Bennett to be defensively ready to play in the post. But also it says a lot about Hunter's skill set because, you know, I leaned over to Scott a couple different times during that game, maybe more than a couple, and said, pointing to DeAndre Hunter, that's why Mariel Shayok's not here anymore. You know, all the talk in the postseason, and this might dovetail as we talk later about the number three ranking after not being ranked preseason. After the loss to Florida last year, and then Mariel Shayok, Darius Thompson, and Jared Reuter all transfer out within a couple of days of each other after the postseason meetings with Coach Bennett. A lot of folks had before that exodus had this Virginia team ranked preseason as a number 5 to number 10 team in the country, and then when those guys left, they went from between 5 and 10 to unranked. And a lot of folks said, well, it's because look at the talent they're losing. Shayok is an established scorer. Thompson's a really valuable bench player. Reuter is more of a, you know, he's a 4 or a 5 guy in your front court rotation, but he gives you depth. And so all of a sudden those guys are gone. What's going on here? Whereas people on the inside like me knew what they saw was DeAndre Hunter. And now also Jay Huff, who has not inserted himself into the mix yet, but Shayok and Thompson in particular saw Hunter and said, he's eating up the minutes next year. That kid's going to take our minutes away. So instead of sitting on the bench for long stretches, let's move somewhere else. And in fact, Thompson, because he's a grad transfer, is actually playing at Western Kentucky. Had a triple-double this past weekend. But Shayok had to sit out this year. He's not a grad transfer. He transferred between his junior and senior seasons. He's watching basketball right now out at Iowa State, whereas this Hunter kid, last two games, double-digit scoring, has played a key role for this team. And is only going to get better. I mean, you know, defensively, he's playing in the post. He hit a big shot late in that game. You talked about the tomahawk dunk over Joel Berry. Late in that game, after Carolina cut the lead down to 6, 7-11 to go, next possession, Virginia runs a play for DeAndre Hunter in the post, and he hits a little fadeaway jump shot about 5 feet out. Tough shot, NBA-type shot. And this kid, as a freshman, has the confidence of Coach Bennett, the confidence of his teammates to be able to take that shot, hit that shot. And so, you know, Hunter's a guy that I really feel like his emergence is going to be really key for this team. I expected it eventually. It's coming a little sooner.
It's fun to watch his emergence. It's fun to watch Momedy seem to pick up some offensive energy to go with some of that defensive energy that we've seen. Gives us another threat potentially down low as his confidence continues, as DeAndre Hunter's confidence continues, Ty Jerome's confidence continues. It's just fascinating to watch this team grow in confidence so fast. And let's talk a little bit about that rankings. We are recording this on Monday. The rankings came out. I even did a double take when I see the number 3 in front of the Virginia Cavaliers. Early on, we were talking, not recording the podcast. I asked you where you thought this Virginia team was going to land, and I was surprised by your response because you thought this was a Final Four team, and we're not even ranked at the start of the year. But could you have expected this level of confidence and efficiency, both on the offensive side and defensive side, at this stage of the season?
Yeah, trust me, I've been breaking my risking breaking my shoulder blades, patting myself on the back the last few days because I saw this coming, but I will admit I did not see it coming this soon. From last March on, when those guys transferred out, and I said the reason why they're transferring out is because Hunter and Huff are going to emerge. Huff is not yet, Hunter has. And because of the depth, because of Jerome and Guy, you knew they'd step up to what they've been doing this year. You know, Guy leading the team 14.9 points. Jerome just under 10 points a game, 9.8 points a game. Hall has stepped up. He's averaging 11.9. So, you know, from a team last year that was punchless, there's a lot of punch all of a sudden. You know, I knew that so add Hunter to that mix. I think still eventually add Huff to that mix. I really think he'll eventually, as this season wears on, he'll step up and be able to play a role in the rotation perhaps for this team. But I said this team would probably take a lump or two in November, December. I kind of looked at this team as a 2013-2014 team. You remember that year, Virginia lost at home in the opener to VCU, lost at home in the Big Ten Challenge to Wisconsin, had that ugly loss on the road at Tennessee, but then went 16-2 in the ACC, won the ACC tournament, went to the Sweet 16. That team really got good mid-January and then all the way through the month of February into March. They didn't hit their stride, though, until mid-January. And I said, I thought this team would probably do the same. They'd lose a few games. I thought a few, not, you know, one or two. I thought maybe three or four games up until this stage. But then lights out after January, because once I figured Hunter would get his feet under him, I thought it might take the backcourt a little while to get used to each other playing the roles they were playing. Because, you know, right now, Guy is averaging 29.8 minutes a game. Jerome's at 28 minutes a game. Hall has played a lot of minutes for this team the past couple of years. But, you know, guys have to step up. They got to get their legs under them a bit. I thought it would take a while for this team to gel. They gelled a lot sooner. I saw it at VCU. That was the second or third game of the season. Game in Richmond when they faced that tough environment, you know, the 40 minutes of hell defense that VCU brings, and Virginia went to that difficult environment, won. Hey, they're already playing pretty good. Now, they lost at West Virginia, who's ranked number 2 this week. Tough scheduling by Tony gets a team ready as well. You know, the win over Providence in New York City. At the time, nobody thought a big deal, you know, beating Providence, what's the big deal there? They just beat Xavier this past weekend and yesterday. You know, so they Tony got them scheduled well. They won those games. They only lost at West Virginia. They were in that game with a minute and 10 to go and lost at West Virginia. So, they're ahead of my schedule, but I still thought this team's ceiling, for me, the team's ceiling hasn't changed. I've thought all along since last March, Final Four is this team's ceiling. Now the rest of the world is kind of figuring out what I've seen and some other people have seen too the last few months.
A lot of fans in the ACC scratching their head right now. A lot of Jekyll and Hyde basketball being played. If you know, we talked about what your snapshots of the potential Final Four were when the ACC started, and we talked about the standards, you know, Duke and Carolina and Miami and maybe Florida State tucked in there, Virginia. Holy cow, on the same weekend, and it's fun watching social media when Duke and Carolina lose on the same days, because Duke loses, Carolina loses first, and all the fans light everybody up, and then Duke goes out versus NC State and lays a relative egg. That was a good looking win for the Wolfpack at home. And out of all of the uncertainty, Clemson and Notre Dame and Virginia are sitting there up top of the ACC undefeated early, 3-0. Mm-hmm. You know, do we need to start believing in Clemson? Do we need to start respecting what Notre Dame's doing without some of their top scorers?
I'm not sure about Notre Dame. I'll say that the jury is very much going to be out on Notre Dame, just because, you know, you lose a guy like Colson, and who knows if he'll be back. It's just going to be hard, you know, and credit to Mike Bray for figuring out how to win the last two games without him and beat an NC State team by 30 points that then the next game out goes out and beats Duke the way they did. You know, Clemson, you know, I'm surprised that they're 14-1 and 3-0 in the ACC, but, you know, Brad Brunell was sort of on the hot seat. A lot of folks had him on the hot seat this year because they've only made one tournament since he got there. It was his first year. And he's missed, had so many near misses at Clemson that some folks thought, you know, that they would need to get in the tournament or he might be done this year. And they came out of non-conference play as usual. They don't schedule tough in non-conference. He was 11-1 coming out of non-conference. That's not unusual for Clemson. You'll see them come out undefeated sometimes and then go, you know, 5-13 in the ACC, somewhere in that range, 6-12, 7-11. So to start 3-0, you know, they haven't played the toughest teams yet, but, you know, they're 3-0, and give them credit for that. And so, you know, the Duke and Carolina conundrum, and I'll just call it that. Starting with Carolina, I think it's lack of depth for them. That, you know, they lost a lot from last year's team. I mean, God, the group that led them to the championship last year, the final the year before, that, you know, they had the game tied at the buzzer and lost at the buzzer. You know, that was a veteran team. Barry is really the only key guy from that. Barry and Pinson, Theo Pinson, are the only guys left, and Barry's the most productive guy.
And the walk-on in May.
And May, the walk-on, who really only contributed starting in the Elite Eight through the Final Four. So, you know, there's lack of depth there. You could see that Saturday. I hadn't really watched them a full game until Saturday. You could really see that Roy likes to play, you know, an 8-9-man rotation. He really only has about 6 guys right now he can rely on, maybe 5 guys he can rely on. He put a couple guys out there, but there's just not the depth there. And Carolina doesn't play that way. Now, Duke, Mike Krzyzewski's made no bones about how he wants his starting five to play a lot of minutes, and he wants him to get used to playing a lot of minutes because he's got a great starting five, and he doesn't have much after that starting five. So you saw that against NC State. You know, he played 6 guys. He played – his 6th man played about 10 minutes. His starting five played the other 190. And, you know, I don't care how many minutes they play together and get used to playing with each other. They got to play some defense. There were a lot of dunks. NC State had a lot of dunks, a lot of layups, a lot of open threes. And that's NC State, a team that lost by 30 to Bonzi Colson-less Notre Dame, you know, 3 nights before. You know, that's 2 losses now in the ACC for – a Duke team, and I've tweeted about this Saturday night, against teams that I jokingly said will play on Tuesday in Brooklyn. You know, I'm not sure that either NC State or Boston College, even though they've got the marquee wins over Duke right now, are much better than bottom 5, bottom 6 in the ACC. And they've got wins over Duke at home, scoring 89 and 96 respectively. So, you know, if that's what's going to happen, and what happens when Duke plays the likes of Virginia, Carolina, Florida, you know, they've already played Florida State, beat them 193 at home. But, you know, they can't win on the road. They're 0-2 in the ACC against bottom feeder teams. You know, they got to fix that up, and I'm not sure how they can fix it up.
Talent will rise, and those kids have a lot of talent. So I'll be curious to see if, even without the defense.
They've got talent, but they don't have defense. And, you know, and Scott German, if he were sitting here with me, here's what he'd be saying. Do those one-and-done kids go to Duke to play defense? Or do they go to Duke to put stats up, put on their resume they played for Coach K, and then get drafted in the lottery? That's the question he's got. And, you know, he's gone this one-and-done route. This is his 4th season playing with the one-and-dones. He won a championship. He's also got bounced in the first round and bounced in the second round. So which is this team? Is this a championship team, or is this a bounced in the first weekend team? Right now, it's a bounced in the first weekend team.
And I would think if you fast forward 3 or 4 years to the talent that's on both of these teams and then look in the NBA, it's a 4-year starter from Virginia that gets Rookie of the Year last year, not one of these Duke one-and-done kids.
Right.
And you've got some kids coming up right now that are getting 4 years of learning how to play basketball the right way. I'll be curious to see if the trend of the one-and-dones continue on those NBA rosters. I'm sure they will. But ultimately, the producers, they're going to be important and critical to these cogs on these teams. Are they going to be the 4-year kids? And will it soon be that your pedigree coming out of Virginia and Tony Bennett's experience is going to be more valuable to an NBA program than the Coach K one-and-done kids?
Yeah, you know, and of course the NBA commissioner is talking with the NCAA about getting rid of the one-and-done rule, basically going to a more baseball-like situation where you can come out after high school, but if you go to college, you got to stay 3 years. When that happens, there's two coaches who won't be coaching anymore because Coach K is already 71. He'll be 71 years old this season, and Calipari will either find an NBA job or just retire himself because that's been their model. I mean, Calipari's dates back about 10 years, recruiting the one-and-dones, not developing kids for 4 years or even 2 years. That'll change things dramatically. But, yeah, it's a great point. I mean, think about two of the UVA kids right now in the NBA who are really – well, actually, even Joe Harris was a four-year player at UVA. Justin Anderson left after his third year. But Mike Scott was at Virginia for 5 years, and he even played a post-grad year in high school. So he was a sixth-year
and
post-grad
player. Playing a valuable
player.
Role with the Wizards right
and
now.
He's, yeah, he's leading the Wizards in shooting percentage anyway off the bench. So, that does speak volumes. And you know, the look at Okafor. I thought Okafor, the Duke Jahlil Okafor, I foolishly thought he was as good or better than Khalil Anthony Towns. The Kentucky player who's now obviously the star player from that class, and Okafor is a guy who's in limbo right now. So who's heard of Justice Winslow since he went to the NBA? It's a question as to whether they're successful at the college level, but for the 1 year they play there, but definitely when they make that next jump up, have they learned anything? And you watching this Duke team play the other night, that's the first time I've watched them play 40 minutes. I'd seen halves of them play at that Portland tournament they played back in November. Didn't play defense in that tournament either, but watching them play 40 minutes the other night, you know, they play a zone defense, and we'll talk about a team that plays a zone defense coming up when we talk about Syracuse. They play zone defense kind of like if you played on a noon ball at the Y, if one of your groups out there played zone defense. There's two guys in the front and three guys in the back, but that's about it. That's the only thing that has any semblance to a 2-3 zone defense for a competitive basketball team. Those guys aren't playing any position defense, even within the 2-3 zone defense. And you saw NC State, again, a team that, you know, they did beat Arizona earlier this season, also got beat by 30 by Notre Dame, sliced and diced that zone without really even much ball movement. And Duke has known this since the beginning of the season. They've been giving up points to good teams all season long. And Krzyzewski hasn't figured it out yet. I wonder if it's just a matter of willpower on his guys' parts.
Well, let's talk about the Boeheim zone that we're going to be facing. You posted on AFP the preview for Syracuse. Late tip, 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. Syracuse totally choked it out against Notre Dame. I mean, they had the lead going into late. Then they turned the ball over at the with about 5 seconds left with a tie game. And I guess some Syracuse kids fell asleep because – there was a 3-on-1 fast break. None of the Q's kids got back. And, you know, you get a put back on a missed shot and, you know, game over. I mean, that was Syracuse's game to win. And they drop it against a game feisty Notre Dame team. What can we expect from Syracuse coming off a tough loss? They're bringing a good zone into JPJ, but facing probably one of the most confident teams in the country right now.
They are. Now this matchup for Virginia it's tough for everybody, obviously, but. You know, these are in some ways mirror image teams because now they play dramatically different styles of defense, but they're both defensive oriented and pace oriented teams. Both will play to around 60-61 possessions per game, so it's not going to be a high scoring game. In fact, KenPom.com has the final score of this game being 58-46 Virginia. So settle in tomorrow. When I wrote in my lead to my story, I said, you know, sometimes you hear about it when you preview a matchup between two teams, you'll say, you know, two up-tempo teams, it's going to be like a track meet. This is going to be more like a Greco-Roman wrestling match. And I say Greco-Roman wrestling, not even like pro wrestling, because at least pro wrestling has like ring entrances and flair and everything else. This is more like your high school amateur wrestling, two guys rolling around a mat for three periods, and you're not going to really know what you're seeing until it's over with and there's going to be a final score. Because Syracuse is 11th in the nation defensive efficiency in terms of points per possession, 0.922 points per possession. They're 11th. Virginia's first, 0.844. That's how good Virginia is defensively. They're that much better than even the 11th best team in terms of defensive efficiency. But these are two pretty efficient defensive teams. Now, Virginia, of course, the pack line has some zone principles. The pack line basically is designed – it's a man defense, but all five guys are ostensibly assigned to guard a quadrant of the court, sort of a 16-foot perimeter around the basket – sort of a zone in a sense. You know, you'll allow your guy to stand outside of that zone and you'll stay with him in a man concept, but you're also responsible for a zone, so you're kind of responsible for both man and zone and portion of the floor. Syracuse is 2-3 zone, of course, the 2-3 zone. And the key from Boeheim with that is he, you know, everybody, anybody can play a 2-3 zone. But what he does is he has big guys on the wings. And you look at his starting lineup, and he only plays really six guys. So look at all six guys he'll play. The shortest guy on the floor is 6'5". He goes 6'5", 6'6", 6'8", 6'8", 6'9", 7'2", with his guys. What that says is, you know, a zone defense is gets you by, so to speak, luring you into passing around the perimeter. So, you know, your point guard will pass to either wing. They'll pass it back. And then eventually you get frustrated and shoot a jump shot. Now, most teams who play the 2-3 have a couple guards who are 6'2", 6'3". They'll have a forward who's 6'5", another forward who's 6'7", another center who's 6'9". You know, they go as big as they go. So even when they concede you a jump shot, they've still got a 6'9 guy out there challenging you on the closeout. And so they don't give up high percentages of three-point makes. They give up high percentages of three-point attempts. Not a lot of makes. And so the approach has to be to figure out how – and Virginia's done as well. So this matchup's an interesting one from an X's and O's standpoint. Virginia has played this well by sneaking a guy in past years. It will be Anthony Gill. This year it will probably be Isaiah Wilkins, the four, basically, into that area between the top of the key and the foul line, sort of 12 to 15 feet at the foul line. And you try to have an entry pass there, a high post pass, basically. So now you're Isaiah Wilkins. You've got the ball 12 to 15 feet from the basket around the foul line. Now you either penetrate, and when the defense sags on you, you kick out to the three-point shooter. So now you're shooting a three, but it's not a three with a guy with a hand in your face. It's a, you know, it's a three where you're catching the ball and running into the three-point shot. Or if you're Wilkins, you have your post guy that's behind you sort of diving down, so, you know, sort of like a backdoor cut. Or you kick it back out and start the whole process over again. Virginia has played this well in the past. And they've also, though, allowed themselves to – there was that famous game in 2015 where they had 2 points with 6 minutes to go in the first half. Still won the game, but were down 13-2 with about 6 minutes to go in the first half, won the game 59-47 because they passed it around the perimeter and kept shooting jump shots without having that penetration lure. So even though it's a zone, you still got to penetrate. You just can't dribble penetrate. You've got to penetrate with that entry pass into the high post. Virginia's done it well. They know the prescription. Let's just see if they're disciplined enough tomorrow night to go with that.
What else is on tap for the AFP? You've got the live blog that you and Scott German are doing, the game recap against Syracuse. What else is going on the AFP this week?
Well, that's the focal point the next couple of days. I mean, got the game recap, or the game preview, excuse me, ready for that. And there's more of detail to me, this is a fascinating X and O's matchup between these two teams. And let me throw in also about this matchup between Syracuse and Virginia. So, you know, Virginia knows how to attack the Syracuse zone. The one area where Virginia wears teams down, Carolina, Duke, anybody else that they play on a regular basis, Virginia's game wears opponents down because not only do they make you work when you have the ball offensively against the pack line defense, because, you know, Virginia switches on all screens with bigs, so they'll double you out of the screen. They basically take your screen and roll game away on the perimeter. They also then, if you dump the ball in the post, they'll post to post double. Most teams will actually double with a guard. So if you dump the ball into the post to a good big man, the guard, after the ball's dumped in, the guy guarding the guy who's dumped the ball in, that guard will then double down. Well, that leaves a three-point shooter open out there, right where you've just left the ball. What Virginia does is run their other post across the lane, and they double the ball out of the guy's hands. And so you almost get no post offense. Carolina, one of the better post teams in the country, had 14 points in the post against Virginia on Saturday. So they do that defensively, and then offensively Virginia runs this mover blocker offense, which is a very patient offense with lots of screens. It's just screen after screen after screen. And yeah, the first few times down the floor it's okay, but when you have to do that 60 times a game, you know, you wear yourself out there, you wear yourself out on offense. We talk about the Cavalanche effect. The Cavalanche effect is a result of Virginia just wearing teams out. They're gassed. And on paper, a team like Syracuse, they only play six guys. On paper would be gassed because they play six guys, and if you had a run around the floor on both ends the entire game, Virginia's prepared for that, and you're not. You only play them once or twice a year, and you're just not ready for that level of intensity. Syracuse, though, defensively plays a zone. And, you know, you play, and anybody out there listening who plays YMCA ball, you know, you play against your guys at noon on weekdays, you know that if you're not expending much energy defensively, if you play a zone, if you know, and there are guys who will play a zone and pick up games, you're not moving much. You're guarding an area of the floor, and you're kind of just standing there. So even though Syracuse's zone is a little more than just that, it's still not much more than just that. That's how Bayham gets away with playing five or six guys for a game. So you're not going to see a Cavalanche effect, and you don't see in these games a Cavalanche effect like you see with almost everybody else Virginia plays, because you know Bayham is smart. He knows, you know, he can recruit to his size specifications. As long as he's got one guard who can dribble penetrate, he can play five guys and have his best five on the floor the entire game, and they're not going to get tired. Now, yeah, they've got to work on offense, but they don't have to work on offense and defense. So that's another intriguing to me part of this X's and O's game between these two coaches.
Be intriguing to watch this game, intriguing and interesting to watch the follow-up. You know, double-digit lead on the stats. We've been playing with the David role all season long, being the unranked, the chip on our shoulder. We are now officially Goliath. So I'll close out the podcast asking you, can Virginia play the Goliath role now as number three in the country?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this before we started recording, and I said I thought they played that on Saturday. And you rightly pointed out, yeah, but there were still a lot of people who had questioned, is this really a legit number eight, at that time, number eight Virginia team, now number three Virginia team? And, of course, Carolina comes in as defending champs, even though, you know, they had lost a couple games recently, including to Wofford. They're still Carolina. You know, they still have a banner from last year in their gym, and we don't have a banner like that in our gym. So that's a fair question, and you know, I guess we'll find out tomorrow night, because Syracuse is a team that on paper shouldn't be competitive. You know that at the pregame, you know, the Vegas line has a double-digit win for Virginia. The KenPom numbers have Virginia winning by 12, and so this shouldn't be competitive in that sense. And, you know, of course, and Syracuse also coming off of back-to-back losses, losing to Wake, a team that is 8-7 right now, lost to Liberty earlier this year, you know, losing to Notre Dame without Colson. So on paper, this shouldn't be a competitive game, but, you know, so, but it's also going to be a tight game because of the way these two teams play. The style of play is going to be different. So, you know, we'll see tomorrow night. Does Virginia come out tomorrow night thinking that they've already won the game because they're number three in the country? I doubt it. I mean, I don't think Tony Bennett teams play that way. But, you know, this is the first time for this team to have this lofty height. You know, when Malcolm Brogdon and Anthony Gill and Justin Anderson, Leonard Parentes and Joe Harris and all those guys, you know, for that three-year stretch when they were, you know, ACC champs, number one seeds, a regular top five team, they learned how to win as a top five team. But then last year was a sort of transition year. You know, we didn't have those guys around. These guys, this group, you know, now Isaiah Wilkins and Devin Hall are holdovers from that group, but they were young guys on those teams. Maybe they can impart that wisdom of, hey, now, you know, now we're the hunted. So it's but yeah, this tomorrow night is the first chance for us to see, and then Sunday with NC State, you know, two teams that are unranked teams that you can let your guard down against, at least on paper, let your guard down against and think you can still win the game. You know, you've got to create the excitement. It's not Duke. It's not Carolina. It's not Miami, a ranked team, a Florida State, a ranked team. You've got to create that excitement tomorrow night. We'll see come out tomorrow night. I'm as curious as anyone else as to how Virginia will handle the situation.
Same here, as all the fans are across the Commonwealth watching and rooting for these Wahoos, and for post-game reaction and follow-up, and then looking forward and ahead to NC State as well. Stay close to Augusta Free Press for all of your UVA sports coverage. For Chris Graham, I am Jeff Fife. Stay warm, be blessed, and have a great week.